It's interesting. So, like, when I, have a new person on my Dragon Boat team that aren't really in the realm of the transplant, but are like somehow connected, but want to get more involved and they join the team. And it's interesting to see their perspective kind of change a little bit because, even transplants aren't a cure. A lot of people think they are and they're not, sadly. They only live for so long. I've had friends that have lived 3 to 5 years, and I have a friend that's turning 50 of their kidney. So it's a big range, and there's a lot of factors.
Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the Ajmera Transplant Centre at Toronto General Hospital, Canada's largest and most comprehensive transplant program, performing over 700 transplants annually. I'm your host, Candace. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, alongside insights and education from leading medical professionals. This episode is a powerful conversation about growing up with kidney disease, navigating dialysis and transplant life from childhood into adulthood, and finding strength through community. I sit down with longtime friend, transplant recipient, advocate, Dragon Boat coach, and transplant games athlete, Jess Bailey. From missing school and feeling different as a kid to receiving a transplant that lasted 24 years, Jess shares her journey with honesty, humor, and hope. Together, we talk about peer support, survivor's guilt, dialysis realities, and living donation. We talk about why connection matters so deeply in the transplant world. Jess opens up about the joy she's found through her activities and sports, and how helping others has helped her realize as well that you're never alone in this journey. Whether you're living with kidney disease, supporting someone through transplant, considering living donation, or simply wanting to understand this community better, this episode with Jess is full of heart, resilience, and reminders that there are always hope. Please enjoy. Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, Jess. I'm so happy that we have finally connected to do this recording today.
Me too.
It's awesome. Now, for listeners, Jess is actually one of the very first people within the kidney community that I met way back in 2010 at a Kidney Foundation walk. So I was celebrating my first kidney transplant anniversary, and Rizwana was like, "You have to meet Jess." So it's been so long now that our paths have crossed like a bunch of times, and throughout different Kidney Foundation things, or Trillium or UHN, or just patient education and being Kitchener natives, right? Coffee yep. shop runs and transplant yep, games and you name it. Yep. Newspapers and all of that jazz. So so this will be different for us, because instead of casually chatting, we're going to dive into some of those questions that we often don't dig into. So I'm wondering if we can go back quite a few years. You've been part of the kidney community since childhood, and I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners and share a little bit about what it was like being a young child living with kidney disease, having to deal with dialysis, all of those things that come with that diagnosis.
Yeah, well, it's definitely different. You miss a fair amount of school here and there for appointments, for checkups, for, special things, special doctor appointments. So you definitely miss school. I don't know, I always found that I was a bit of the outsider because of the air quotes special treatment, which was basic needs at that point. But when you're little, people don't understand, so it was definitely different. I do know, like, it wasn't the best being different in school. I'm not sure about you. I have another friend that totally, like, she had really good friends, and nothing, if anything ever came up, they would basically make it right. But I didn't have that, so that was hard, we'll say. I know, like, I have a younger friend in the transplant world, and It sounds like she is still dealing with some of those issues, which is sad to hear.
Yeah, I mean, like that's basically when you're older, you're like, woohoo, I am different. This is awesome. I don't want to be same as everybody else. But when you're a kid, all you want is to be invisible and just be part of the crew and just like another duckling with all of the other kids, right? So having to have anything that is different, you know, let alone missing school and even trying to build relationships when you miss so much school because of illness is tough, right?
Yeah, and homework. It's
Homework.
so much homework. And
Yeah.
most kids be like, yay. And it's like, no.
Yeah, all
I
of
would,
those things.
I wanted to finish that assignment. But yeah, it definitely did not happen.
And so, you know, thinking about that journey as a kid, how long were you on dialysis before you received a first transplant?
I was super lucky. I was on dialysis for about 9 months as a kid.
And then how long did that transplant last?
That transplant was just shy of 24 years.
24 years. Wow. That's incredible. And so, what was that kind of transfer as a kid going from dialysis treatments to then transplant life as a child?
Well, you're still different. I missed like the first third of grade three, if I remember right. So I do remember like they put me in the same class as my one friend, so that was nice.
Was there an impact with like having to take the meds as a young kid, trying to remember, like, how did you manage all of that on top of just being a kid?
The meds were super problem to remember. So I usually had people telling me quite often. So a lot of people use like, the Monday to Friday box for meds and stuff. Well, my meds were in foils and still are actually, and they don't fit in those little containers. You know, when we were little, water bottles were not a thing in school.
No, not at all.
So I know it might sound weird to some of our listeners if they're younger, water bottles were are a thing in school now, but back then they were not. You were not allowed to have any type of drink in class. So me having that definitely did not help the popularity contest.
Right. And so like having that journey as a you know young kid into teenagehood, did you find, you know, going into that teenage realm in high school, like how was dealing with those emotions of just being like I'm a weirdo because I'm a teenager, right? All of us feel that way when we're 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, thinking my goodness, I don't know what's going on in the world. And then you add on top of that, this living with a kidney transplant and trying to manage meds. And, you know, did you have a way that you could kind of compartmentalize those things?
I think I kind of always have a little bit. I just, live to the best of my ability and always have done that. High school was challenging. I know it is for most people for sure. But yeah, I really didn't have a lot of friends back then. Like I have a gazillion friends now, which is amazing and I love it. But back then, not so much. So I actually loved auto class.
Amazing.
Yeah, so auto is kind of where I hung out when I had free time, when I got to just do projects. My teacher, I would finish my work and they're like, okay, go design something. I would go, design stuff, paint stuff. It was fun.
And I found that as a teen too. Like, I found my kind of salvation in the drama room, like with a bunch of the drama kids. And so, you know, it was like a safe space to hang out and people who were like you, and you could kind of just go and do your thing and be away from like the masses of high school and enjoy like your type of humans. And I think like so often when when kids are in that realm of like high school or even younger, thinking I'm alone, I don't have a lot of friends, I don't know what is happening here. Like, I always tell my nephews, like, find what it is that like sets you on fire and focus on that. Like, if it's auto class, if it's theater, if it's like tech, whatever it is, there will be people there like you that you can be amongst, right? And it's so much harder in high school. Once you get to university, you're placed in classes with people, or college, or in the workplace, you're then in that group all the time, right? Because you're in your specialty. But in high school, it's so hard to find that group of people who can be a safe space for you. And as a kid and, you know, teenager going through all of that, if there's, you know, somebody who's younger, who's living with kidney disease or on dialysis, what would you tell like a youth going through this from your experience?
It's a great question, first of all. You're not alone. You know, Kidney Foundation has support groups for youth, for the parents, for supporters, for young adults, for general groups. So first of all, you're not alone. And just like everybody else, find your niche, just like we were saying. And it's okay to be different. It might not feel that way right now, as we both probably understand, but in the long term, you will appreciate it.
That's really, really good advice. So thinking about, you know, people who are kind of outside of the transplant world, for us, you know, we've been in it for so long that that's just our norm. The people we're around are part of the transplant world. You know, people in our network, we talk about it all the time. Our social circles include it. But for people who are outside of that transplant world and might not fully understand what it's like living with kidney disease or waiting for a transplant, what do you think they don't fully understand, or what you think needs more understanding from that group of people outside of the transplant world?
Yeah, that, you know, we all are going through a very similar journey, but we might not be the same. It's interesting. So like when I, you know, have a new person on my Dragon Boat team that aren't really in the realm of the transplant, but are like somehow connected, but want to get more involved and they join the team. And it's interesting to see their perspective kind of change a little bit and like almost become part of us. Well, not almost, like become part of us, and like just the understanding of we still have bad days, or as I call them, couch days in air quotes.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like transplant is not a cure. You know, a lot of people think they are and they're not, sadly.
Yeah.
You know, they only live for so long. You know, I've had friends that have lived 3 to 5 years, and I have a friend that's turning 50 with their kidney. So it's a big range, and there's a lot of factors.
Mm-hmm. And multiple transplants too, like people who are not in the kidney world often don't understand that that's common for especially if you're diagnosed young and you have a transplant young. You know, if you're going to live till 80, you're likely going to need a couple kidneys in your life, right? Like I have a friend who's on their 4th kidney transplant right now. And they're 50. Like it's, yeah. And unfortunately, like they have an autoimmune disease that often will attack that new kidney. But for people in my life who are not in that transplant world or in the healthcare world, they're like, 4 kidneys? Where do they all go? Like, what happens in there? You know, all of these questions like that. And, you know, it's interesting. And you brought up that Dragon Boat community, and you're so involved and so invested and, you know, so passionate about it. And, you know, listening to you talk about it, there's such a strong sense of resilience and community in your Dragon Boating. And I'm wondering what you have witnessed through being part of the Dragon Boat world.
You know, someone gave us a life and we're living it to the best as we can.
And the people who are not transplant recipients, like how are they involved in that and, you know, become part of the crew?
Yeah, so on my local team, Transplanted Dragons, and that's the team I invented with my husband, 2018. And then COVID, you know, we were there for a couple of years. COVID came, that lovely COVID. And in air quotes, just for anyone who's listening, that's in air quotes. And then, so we took 3 years off just because it's a transplant team and I just wanted to make sure that we were good to go. And at the time, like 2020, we had a coach, but I knew we were getting to the point where there weren't enough coaches. So in 2023, before the season, I got my steering license.
Amazing.
And I am now the coach too.
Incredible. Oh, the list of things that Jess Bailey can do. That's amazing. That is so cool.
Well, I didn't want my team to vanish.
Amazing. And I feel like it has such like kind of like a direct line to also like who you are and how you are with things like that too. Like your thought process of, you know, this is a group of people who relies on each other and I don't want them to lose that. And you've done a lot within community, not just, you know, the Dragon Boat, also, you know, peer support over the years and supporting other patients who have been through this and families. And, you know, just that idea of being there for somebody and making sure that they understand, like you've said a couple times already, like that you're not alone. Why do you think that peer support is so important for people? And why have you continued to be so involved over the years?
It's important because like you might feel alone. You know, I grew up, I was the only one in my neighborhood, that's for sure. Until, you know, I met people from other communities, like hours away. You know, I had my best friend was 3 hours away at least when I was little. So, you know, you don't get to see each other that often.
Mm-hmm.
But online, now that we have that wonderful online and like we're talking now online,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we can support each other.
You know, either logging into like a peer support group or doing a call one-on-one, how do you think that makes people feel when there's somebody on the other line that says, I understand?
Hopeful, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Realization that, you know, it's not just me. I can do this.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think that is something that is sometimes hard when you are diagnosed with a chronic illness. It's not something that you can, you know, have a surgery or take a pill or do a treatment and it's gone, right? Like when you're diagnosed with kidney disease, this is your life sentence now that you are a kidney patient. And I think there can be a lot of hopelessness when like the initial diagnosis comes or when you are just starting dialysis and thinking, how am I going to manage all of this? And, you know, how am I going to do any of it? Is there something that has pushed you throughout the years? Like, is there an activity or, you know, people or things that you do that have kept you hopeful through your journey that you think are helpful for others to think about as well?
First of all, I just try and, you know, live life the best I can. I try to like, all right, we'll figure this out and keep moving on. That's just kind of how I am, I guess. I don't really think of it.
I mean, you're one of the busiest people I know, for sure. So I'm sure, you know, the community and activities that you're part of, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, like, why do you do so many things? Not like how, but why? And I said, like, thinking about you as well, like, we're given this chance at a life. Who knows how many days we have here? And when you face something like a diagnosis and dialysis and all of these treatments and, you know, looking at your pills and thinking, all right, thank you, meds. I'm going to take you. Hopefully you're going to keep me going for another little while. You know, I think you just have to kind of embrace as much of it as you can, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I wasn't sure that I would see my 40th birthday. And so like that night, kind of looking around my backyard being like, all right, I'm 40. This is awesome. Let's do another 20, right? Like, you know, having that gratitude that you can age and, you know, you can do all of these things. Being an auntie, like, I know that's one of your biggest joys in life too.
Yeah, people, like, when they're getting older, like, we're getting older, oh no. And I'm like, okay, it's better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm. Celebrating all of those things that we're able to do, right? Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, often people who are diagnosed as well, we kind of hide what is happening. And often, you know, we don't want to be known as the sick person or like the person who's dealing with something differently than somebody else. And, you know, sometimes there are emotions and challenges that kidney patients and families struggle with that maybe don't get talked about enough. I'm wondering, you know, in all of your years of peer support and your personal experience, you know, what are some of those challenges that you have seen or faced? And, you know, how have you given advice or supported people to go through those?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, I think, in the journey to start. So I'm going to kind of work backwards. So like when you get a transplant, some people have like survivor guilt that they're still here.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to think too deeply into that realm. I try just to think forward and like, all right, what's the cool thing this week or today even? So like I try just to look forward and not too much backward. Like memories are great, don't get me wrong. But just in terms of like living it up, I just try to live it up. But so then backwards. So if you're in dialysis, I'm kind of going backwards. Overwhelmed with all the, first of all, information. Like when you first start dialysis, it's like, whoa, hold on, what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So depending on which type of dialysis you do, like some people pick in-center, and that is typically, not always, but typically 3 times a week. If you're doing peritoneal dialysis, that is typically at home. You get trained. Don't worry. Anyone out here listening, they're like, what? They just send you home? No, no, no. You get trained a lot before they send you home.
Mm-hmm.
That goes for home hemodialysis too. Yeah. Our nurses are great.
They are. Yeah.
But it is definitely overwhelming at the beginning.
You know, you kind of start out in that clinical realm of feeling like you're all alone, and dialysis just becomes another part of your routine, right?
It really does. It's like a part-time job.
Mm-hmm. I remember thinking that, like, so scary during the training, like you're living with brain fog. And then I remember thinking, like, how am I going to remember all of this stuff when I don't even remember if I ate or, you know, if I did my laundry? Like at the time, I remember thinking it is hard for me to remember a lot of things. And now I'm going to try to remember how to do my dialysis. But the training is so great and so, you know, yeah, just very, very informative and supportive. And, you know, you just get into your groove and then that's your new normal, right?
New lifestyle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking with the newly diagnosed, like pre-dialysis patients, what is some advice you would give them?
First of all, I know if you're listening, you're just being diagnosed. I know it's super scary. First of all, and air hugs to you. But again, you're not alone. I know you probably feel overloaded, maybe. Take notes. If you have questions, write them down. However you do that, phone, paper, however you keep notes, do that. Because it helps. Because you were talking about brain fog. It does happen. You know, you wake up 3 a.m. and go, oh, I forgot this question. We'll write it down for your next time when you go see your team.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And you know, with all of the advocacy and like education work that you do with patients and families and donors in the community, what do you think actually motivates people to learn more about organ donation, to step forward to be a donor, or even to look into things? Because I know there's a lot of people that may not be ready to, you know, jump into the deep end and become a donor, but they're curious and they want to know more. What do you think actually helps people to motivate them to go down that path?
Well, I think a lot of people are motivated by being touched by the disease somehow. So there's that section. For total strangers, well, I shouldn't say strangers, right? We're all waiting to be friends. But for people who are just interested and be like, hey, what is this about? Maybe I could do it. So work out for a kidney. We're going to stay in the kidney world because we're both kidneys. It takes a bit of time. They have to do, you know, it's the blood work and there's lots of different testing of different parts of your blood. So it's not just, am I, you know, A positive, A negative, in all that realm. It's not just that. I wish it was, but it's not. But for those people, you know, look into it. And you're going, well, I kind of wanted to look into it, but where do I go? So I know beadonor.ca has some really good facts. I'm sure UHN has some good facts too. And depending on the person and their blood, I know it can take at least a few months to do all, like, all the blood work and all the tests that they need to do. They really want to make sure a donor or potential donor is very healthy because they don't want anything going wrong with them, right? So they want to make sure that person is super healthy before, you know, they say yes to a donation. And once you get to that part, the donation, it's what, like a few hour surgery for a donation now? It's much less invasive than it used to be. And then you're in the hospital for less than a week. I think my mom, so my second kidney was through paired exchange, and I believe my mom was in for 5 days.
Amazing. So with your second kidney, like with your second transplant that recently happened, can you talk a little bit about your donor experience, you know, who your donor was, how that happened, and a little bit about the paired exchange program for people who have never heard of it before?
Definitely. So the paired exchange program, I think, is a great program. And I know it started when we were in college, university area.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is that you have a bunch of people together. So you have pairs, hence the name of it. So like me and my mom was in the program, and say you and your best friend, you know, we've all been tested, we've all been cleared, and somehow they have this massive database, and somehow they've matched us all up in a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impressive how that works.
So your mom donated to a stranger somewhere, and a stranger donated a kidney to you from somewhere in Canada. And like, not to speak to your mom, but, you know, have you chatted with her? Like, how did she feel about donating to a stranger so her kid could get a kidney?
Yeah, we haven't talked a bunch about it. But I do know, you know, like, she's my mom. She wants the best for me and to make it happen.
Yeah. And, you know, what I think is the coolest part about paired exchange is that now there's two people out there with healthy kidneys. Who knows how many people were in your chain? There could be 6 or 8 people who went through that procedure, right? But instead of in the past, if your mom wasn't a match, that might have just been the end, right? And now your mom can swap with somebody. I always like calling it the kidney swap because it's just so much easier than the kidney pair donation program. But yeah, swapping kidneys and what a cool way to show just like absolute generosity and like kindness into the world, that you're willing to donate a kidney to a stranger so that your loved one gets a kidney too.
Or even like a stranger just donating. Some people just donate because they feel like it's their thing to do. And I wish there were more of them.
Mm-hmm. And that's neat too. I've seen how that works with the chains because they don't come in with a pair, right? It's just an anonymous donor who donates a kidney to the chain. And then there's an extra kidney at the end that goes to somebody on dialysis who may not have had the chance to have a living donor. So like what an amazing thing for people to do and be part of. Thinking about, you know, we've talked about different things over the years, but thinking about the future of transplant, the future of organ donation, my brain always goes there. I'm like, where are we going next, right? Like, I love diving into science fiction type stuff. And, you know, I go super, super far into there. But then also, like, seeing in real time, like the amazing innovation that's happening at UHN with like ex vivo machines and, you know, looking at compliance for medication and like all of the things that they're working towards. Even in the States, you know, seeing some things about xenotransplant and pig organs, like what, when you think about the future, what gives you hope about transplant?
That, you know, hopefully, you know, one in multiple future, you know, they'll be able just to fix the organ. But in the meantime, you know, there is great research going on. You touched on that one machine. I always forget its name.
Yes, the ex vivo.
Yes, that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's definitely changed lives in the transplant world. The organs can stay out of a human body longer and even get repaired depending on what's going on with them to go into a new person.
And it really does sound like science fiction, right? Like it doesn't sound real.
But yeah. It is happening now.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of this, what we're talking about, did not happen 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, like, things are happening. You might not see it in, you know, everyday life, but it is happening out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you think, you know, if you think about transplant 25 years from now, like, what would be your hope for somebody who would be newly diagnosed?
That it wouldn't take so long for them to get back to their living their best life. Because sometimes it takes a while. Like some people are on dialysis for a long time before they get a call.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Thinking about some of those people, thinking about, you know, people who might be listening today, maybe they're waiting for a transplant, maybe they're supporting a loved one, maybe they're even considering being a living donor. What would you want them to hear or to take away from your journey and all of your years of knowledge in the kidney world?
Is never lose hope. There's always something good about every day. And that is legit my motto, how I live every day. And if you're thinking about donating a kidney, you know, please look into it. It sounds really scary, and a little bit of it is, you know, you do go to sleep and they take an organ out of you, but you heal and you know, you function. We function quite well with one kidney. We're very blessed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can do it.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you would want to say to all of, you know, the care team that has been part of your journey through the years? I know we don't get to talk about them as much as we want to, right?
You're right, yeah. Thank you to them. You know, the late nights in the hospital, I've had nurses, you know, listen to a baseball game for me for 20 minutes when they were on their break. Or, you know, bringing in a special stuffy for me, or, you know, whatever it is, that special thing that they did. Thank you. or just being there when you're like super sick, you know, and just holding your hand or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. They are definitely the ones that you don't forget and that carry you through. Like I'm going to be 17 years post-transplant in September. And I still remember the nurse who held my hand in my first hemodialysis run. I remember her face. I remember her voice. I remember everything about her. And, you know, you just don't forget those little things that they did for you that might have just seemed like their job to them, but were everything. Like, you know, being a 24-year-old kid who didn't know anything about hemodialysis, and then having a nurse grab my hand and say, everything's going to be okay. Like, what a difference that made. Nurses are the best humans on the planet, angels on earth, right? The one thing we didn't talk about, you have been part of the transplant games for so many years, so many medals. What do you love most about the transplant games?
Connecting with all my transplant friends. You know, some of us are far away. You know, we're coast to coast. And so, you know, we don't necessarily get to see each other very often.
Yeah, bringing together everyone.
And we both have a good friend from Australia now that comes.
Yes, yes. Shout out to Kevin, who, you know, absolutely stole my child's heart, and such a fun, you know, friendship that they have together, sending each other, you know, different treats and snacks from Canada to Australia. And then Jess brought us back the giant koala bear from Australia, and Clementine always pretends that it's real. So, you know, those relationships, you're right. They're like so incredible to build from coast to coast and around the world, that doesn't matter if you're Canadian or Australian, you know, you're there together, and you know, you have something in common, and then you get to play games all week and enjoy and honor our donors and, you know, all of those incredible things. And are you going to be in Sherbrooke this year for the transplant games?
I am, but I hear you're not.
We're still trying to figure it out. We're supposed to be at a cottage, so we will see if I can make it for a couple of days. But yeah, anybody who is part of the transplant community, donors, recipients, family members, check out the transplant games, because it is a connection unlike any other, like such a celebration and like deep love and community with everybody. It's amazing.
Definitely. We cheer everybody. We coach everybody, you know, someone on the other team needs some help. Okay. I'm okay with that. Let's go help them. You know, it's not about the winning, really. You know, of course, we want to win. We're human. But at the same time, it's more about connecting.
Yes. And it's interesting, too, going there. Like, sometimes you might think, like, oh, that person's from this organization, or, you know, they have a C-level position at that organization, or they do this thing there. And then coming to the games, it's like everybody takes off their hats of whatever they are in the regular world, and they're just there as people. And it was funny, because when I was playing lawn bowling, I had my 3-year, like at the time Clementine was only 3, and lawn bowling, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work with her. She's 3. And then like all of our transplant aunties and uncles and people who hardly even knew her were like, oh yeah, we're going to have a picnic and play. And you know, she's feeding your husband goldfish and like forcing him to color with her on the blanket. And then, you know, one of the like higher level managers from a big, you know, national organization is sitting on the ground with her coloring, and like just all titles are removed. And just like, I look at the sidelines, I'm like, my kid's just playing with our community, like just being taken care of like she's one of their own, right? It was so cool to see. Yeah. Yep.
And she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. Yeah. She is part of our community.
Yeah. And still to this day, you know, the opening ceremonies included that song Roar. And still to this day, she's like, it's our transplant song, mama. So it's so, so sweet to, yeah, like the connection that years later she still has with like how joyful and like hopeful and fun all of that is. And I think at the end of the day for me, that's why it's so beautiful too, because you often think, oh, transplant recipients or people who are living with this must be so sad and, you know, must be such a tough journey. And, you know, those days are just pure joy and laughter and gratitude and community. Like it's the best of the best, like the highest level of joy being together with that group. Yeah.
Yeah, it truly is. And yes, if you're thinking about your energy, yes, it is tiring, but it is 1,000% worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So make sure you have a couple days after the games to relax and sleep.
Yeah, I don't do that well. I kind of have a regatta right after. Like, yeah.
Of course you do.
I did that 2 years ago too. And the team I was on was like a higher end performance team. Yeah. They understood when I said no 2K when I kind of forgot to breathe the finish. We were paddling so hard that I forgot to count. And when I count, makes me breathe. And I count under my breath. No one can hear it. But I forgot to count, which means I pretty much held my breath for the whole finish, which is about 30 strokes, 30 to 40 strokes. I scared the coach who was on the drum. I was at first seat, so I was pacing with my friend. It was a lovely race. But then they were like, okay, no 2K.
No 2K. We need just to breathe. That's so funny.
Yeah. They're like, just breathe right now. They even took my paddle away.
That's amazing.
Okay, can I have my water bottle, please?
Yeah, right? That's like our security blanket as transplant patients, right? Give me my water bottle.
Yeah, a lot of teams overall, like for a race, races are short. Mm-hmm. So it's not like practice. So you don't typically take your water bottle, but I always tell whichever coach I'm helping out, like, nope, it stays with me. It's never full, but it stays with me.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, that you're right. It's our security blanket.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yep. It's so funny, right? Yep. Amazing. Well, thank you for taking the time with me today on the podcast and for everything you do for the kidney community and the transplant community. You are one in a million for sure. And we're all so grateful that you're part of our world.
Definitely. I'm grateful you're part of my world too, girl.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jess. And we are very happy that we got the time with you on the podcast. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about living organ donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.